I'm very excited to get you guys in on our interview with Kurt Maitland. But before we do, we're going to talk about the cocktail of the week. So this one is going to feature some rum that we had sent to us by our friends from the Gaining Momentum podcast. So we're definitely going to be making a rum cocktail, and you guys definitely should be checking out their new podcast launching next week. Don't you worry, you're going to hear more from them as time goes on. For this week, for the cocktail, what we're dealing with is going to be nice, quick, and simple Dirty Man's Rum Punch. We better not even call it rum punch, or we're going to get ourselves in trouble, especially with our Bajan community. So all this is something very simple for you guys to throw together and spritz it up, and gives you a little bit of that tiki flavor without going overboard with a lot of the ingredients. So basically, all you're going to have is some juice, some carbonation, and then, of course, you're going to have your base, you're going to have your rum. Now, the exact recipe you can find on our Instagram, you can find at thirstworldproblems.ca, and we're even going to have a how-to video for this one. And like I said, this is a Lionel Richie cocktail, so it's nice and easy to put together. For our fancier cocktails, you can go check out at Thirstologist. They're doing a great job over there, and the pictures are to die for. But getting back to the drink of the week, the reason why we chose this one, and I've infused mine with just a pineapple and ginger ale, so I didn't get too crazy this time. So the reason why I chose that and put these two flavors together is there's nothing better than having a nice rum cocktail. And the rum that we have is very tasty on its own. So that's why we kind of reduce the mix that you have going with it. And you can increase it depending on how smooth the rum that you're using is. We're using bamboo in this one, which I know a lot of people say is more of a liqueur because it's 35% as opposed to, you know, the 40 proof. But once again, I said, this is quick, easy. We're going to toss in some rum. Toss in your juice, toss in your carbonation, whatever you prefer, ginger ale, lime soda, whatever it is that you prefer. And then you're going to sit back and enjoy, and you're going to reminisce of being on the beach. And that's why this week we are going with this cocktail. And this cocktail, we're going to name the Poor Man's Rum Punch. It's easy to throw together, easy to enjoy. So we're helping you drink better and drink responsibly. Now make sure you guys pause it here. Go make yourself this quick and easy drink. Come back and join the conversation because we're going to a gun blazing. Now hit the theme song.
Welcome to the Thirst World Problems Podcast, where we talk about drinks, current events, music, and more. Now, here's your host, Nick Dugal, and his panel of experts, B, Bell, and the infamous Doc.
This is Bell coming at you from behind the mic on Thirst World Problems, and today we are joined by a very special guest. This man is ranked number 8 in the entire world as far as lumberjacking goes, and Kurt Maitland's here to just kind of tell us his story and help you guys out a little bit with chopping down trees. Did I get that right? You're a professional lumberjack?
Sometimes. You know, professional drinker, or it's my sideline. I got a day job and I drink on the side. Maybe the day job helps me drink. I don't know. It either supports it or inspires it, one or the other.
Well, I did a poor job of introducing you, Kurt. Can you tell the listeners here? Can you tell the listeners here a little bit about yourself?
I mean, what is it to say? I write about whiskey. I wrote a book about cocktails because somebody's like, Kurt, can you, we want you to write a book on cocktails. I'm like, I write about whiskey. They're like, yeah, no, we didn't ask you that. You write a book on cocktails. I'm like, yeah, sure. I can write a book on brain surgery. Just give me enough time to research it and get into it. And that's fine. And I already drank cocktails. It's just like, I had to learn more about everything else, but I've been drinking for a long time. So it wasn't like I was unfamiliar with what a cocktail was and what I liked.
Well, before we get away from that, since you're an expert here and you've been drinking for so long, can you tell us about your first drink? Can you recall that?
Yeah, my first drink would have probably been rum punch because parents are Trini. Nice. And it was always rum. It was like, you know, there was Angostura bitters and there was definitely rum around the house. And then beer with the old man. He would give me a sip, you know, because as a kid, you're always going to ask, you know, dad, what does it taste like? Whatever. So he gave me a little itty bitty bit. That's where it started. All the professional drinking started in college, where I like wasn't overly fond of beer. So I went right to whiskey with a friend of mine. and kind of stayed with whiskey the whole way through.
That loyalty.
If you can convert that to like mixed martial arts, what kind of belt would you have when it comes to whiskey?
I would probably say with whiskey, I'm probably black belt, and I'm working on my degrees of black belt at this point. And of course, I understand that people who are above me, you know, but I mean, I still got the black belt though.
I love it. I love it. One thing I got to ask you is, when you go to different, like, how often do you go to like different distilleries when it comes to whiskeys, or is it more of just you just trying out the brands that are
popular? I've turned my hobby into a combo vacation / tax deduction. Gotcha. If I go to a place that has a distillery, I'm going to go look at the distillery. Mainly, what you find is that most distilleries, they look like the 57 Chevy. You pop them open, it's a bunch of pipes, some tubes, it'll have a still, there's water running on the ground. I mean, you know, the ads will show something that's very picturesque, which is fine. That's probably the outside. But the inside, it's not too far off from the inside of an old car. Now, but I like going. So, like, I go to Scotland. I've been to distilleries so far, Scotland, England, New Orleans, Kentucky, Tennessee, Japan, and Taiwan.
Oh.
You know.
I love Japanese whiskey. That's like my favorite thing right now. Japanese whiskey is amazing.
Yeah. And it's a great place to go because it's like, it's weird. They revere whiskey. Like, when you go to a Japanese bar in Japan, it's like going to a church. It's like, it's not crowded. It's kind of quiet. The guy, the people who are there, whoever they are, the owner, they, you know, generally be like the owner and a spouse. They'll run the bar. They may have hired somebody with you. You may sit there and not talk to anybody. They'll talk to you if you want it. They'll leave you the hell alone if you want it. They'll just push the book in front of you with all the whiskeys they have, and you start picking stuff. If they like you, they got stuff under the bar they might pull out to let you taste. Like, oh, well, you seem okay. Here, have this. Which is the way I try to roll.
It's always going to be under the table. Those are the best drinks, right?
Same thing with like if you go to a whiskey festival, take a look at what's on top, but usually most of the reps will have some bottle they're hiding under the table. Some rare shit, some stuff they haven't released yet, you know, the expensive shit. They're not going to leave it out for anybody to touch, but it's like if you know to ask, it's down there.
What are some bad whiskeys you've had in your life?
There's something called Imperial. And now you have to be careful. There's two types of Imperial. There's American Imperial and there's a Scotch Imperial. The Scotch Imperial is excellent. It's one of my favorite whiskeys of all time. The American Imperial, one of my guys, when he rated it like a D-. I wouldn't, you know, if you like drinking, I don't know that I wash my boots with that thing. It's kind of like, it's basically flavored vodka. And the thing is, it's fine. Like, if you like vodka, that's great. But, like, vodka isn't whiskey. So if you take vodka, add a little coloring to it and call it whiskey, that's kind of what Imperial is. And that's pretty miserable. Mm.
You know? So Kurt, what are some, like, what's a whiskey that, because everyone's always, you know, I feel like everyone's always wanting to, you know, spend a little bit more to get something nicer, or people are on the side where they just want to grab the $15, $20 bottle and call it a day. What's the middle point price-wise and quality-wise for a go-to whiskey where you're going to get high quality, but also the price isn't astronomical?
It's a good question. What I find is this. Depending on type of whiskey, you can generally stick below 60, even into 50, and get a good whiskey that you have no problem drinking. So, for example, with Scotch, there's a whiskey called Monarch. You can get like a 12-year-old Monarch for like $40. Old Pulteney, another 12-year-old, $40, $45, depending where you're at. For bourbons, I'd say you get Michter's Standard, either like their bourbon or their rye. That's going to be a $50 bottle. The Four Roses single barrel, one of my personal favorites, same thing. It's like $40. And don't get me wrong, there are bourbons that are like I think it's something very old Barton. Very Old Barton, you can buy a liter of it for $19 US. And it used to be that that thing was like an 8-year-old, which was older than, if I remember correctly, it might have been older than this, or the same age as like Maker's Mark for like half the price. That's the kind of thing where if you were throwing a party, you want to do like some kind of bourbon punch, you go get yourself 3 bottles of that bad boy, or go get you, you know, a case. You're dropping a little bit over 100 and you got enough booze for everybody to get everybody lit, you know, and drink good stuff. That's the thing is you can get lit on garbage, but you can actually hear you can drink something good.
I think the worst is when you try to look out for a special bottle to give to someone and you feel when you give it to them, they're not going to appreciate it as well. So you kind of,
So you go for the brand or something, right?
You kind of don't ever want to do that again, right? So,
well, you need to know your audience and understand that'll happen even with stuff that everybody knows is good. So like I had a friend of mine who went to India to see like her husband's family. And I think she brought him like, she went and found some special scotch. And they were like, you know, they were very thankful for it, but they didn't recognize the name. It's kind of like you, it's almost in some respects, it's easier to roll there with a bottle of like Macallan 12 or, you know, Johnny Black or Johnny Blue, because they know what it is. You know, it's like, oh, okay, cool, you got me this. It's for the people like, I'm a pain in the ass to shop for because I have so much stuff in the house. You know what I have. I got 4 bottles of that shit someplace else. But what I would say is you kind of need to know some basics about what they like. If they like a sweet spirit, there are whiskeys that are sweeter. They want it smoky, then, you know, there are ones that are smoky. I tell people, if they ask me, I'm like, okay, well, give me a price range first. Like, how much you want to spend? And then I'll say, within that, let me give you 3 options within your price range. And here's where you get it. And that's probably, for me, the best way to go.
Well, especially like an Indian household, if you get them a Johnny Black, Johnny Blue, they just, that's like winning the NBA finals to them. Like, that's the ultimate prize, right? I don't know anybody else, but everyone, the house that I go to, and you give them that to them, you're in the family, man. That's the greatest thing ever.
The same thing in China. And I tell people, the analogy I make, it's kind of like blue jeans. It's like everybody knows what Levi's are. Levi's aren't the best blue jeans on the planet, but everybody knows it. So nobody complains if you roll in rocking Levi's. You could get some designer blue jeans, but people are like, I don't know that. You know, that could have been some like bootleg shit you got, like, you know, in what used to be Kmart. But I know what Levi's are. So, you know, if you give them what they know, they're happy.
Just play the hits.
Sometimes you have to roll that way, yeah. Right.
So could you help us understand, especially for some of our younger listeners and myself, difference between rye, bourbon, and scotch?
Sure. Well, the thing is, they're all whiskeys. So some people, they'll throw like, oh, American whiskey. Okay, there are American whiskeys, things that are specifically American, like bourbon. Bourbon is, used to be people think, and including me, I used to think you had to make it in Kentucky. You can make bourbon anywhere in the U.S. You just have to follow the rules to make bourbon. Rye whiskey, it's just 51% rye, with the remainder being either, you know, figure if you have 100% of things that could be in the whiskey, 51% or more would make it a rye whiskey, but the remainder could be barley, could be wheat. You know, you have weeded whiskeys, stuff like Pappy's. Now, scotch is 100% barley, and it has to be distilled and aged in Scotland. So let's say you took some whiskey and you distilled it in Scotland and you took it somewhere else, like the Japanese are occasionally fond of doing. It's no longer scotch because it wasn't aged in Scotland or it wasn't bottled in Scotland, but it was made in Scotland. That's kind of but basically for every whiskey, so like Indian whiskey, as far as stuff made in India, you know, it's made in India. Japanese whiskey, for the most part, is made in Japan. The Japanese rules are kind of shady. I love Japanese whiskey too, but I have to be real careful about what I drink because it came out recently and we had heard rumors where they were buying scotch and Canadian rye, bringing it back to Japan and blending it to make a Japanese blend. But people are like, well, yo, if it's got Canadian in it, and it's got, you know, if it's got scotch in it, it's not a Japanese blend. It was blended in Japan. You could say that. But you think blend, like if I tell you scotch blend, you're thinking, okay, it was blended in Scotland. Not, oh, well, I went and got some stuff, you know, all over the world and put it together over here, and now it's Japanese. So.
Wow, that's crazy. But how does it get approved for that then? Like,
well, what happens is that the rules in Japan are kind of loose. So in Scotland, they have organizations, and like for it to be listed as Scotch, it has to follow certain things. It has to have been barreled there, as I said before. With the Japanese, it's like anything that's listed as a Japanese single malt, generally it'll have been distilled in Japan, follow the same procedures as Scotland, which is because they put it in competition, they have to follow those rules. But anything else, where it might just say, you know, Japanese malt, it may say pure malt or something, they're making a distinction. And then that pure malt, it's like, oh, it's whiskey and it's single malt scotch, or it's a blend of scotches, or sorry, a blend of whiskeys, but occasionally it's a blend of some Japanese whiskey and some scotch. But for their rules, you don't have to really list that. So they can sell it because it's still whiskey and it was bottled in Japan. So the hope is that there'll be some clarification. They claim they like it because it gives them more options to kind of craft different whiskeys, which is true, but guys like, but also lets you be shady. So, you know, ideally we need to tighten it up. So for example, in the States, if you made whiskey and you didn't follow the bourbon rules, you would just call it an American whiskey. I mean, you made the whiskey, it's made in America, whatever. It's still a whiskey. It's just not bourbon. And so they won't let you put bourbon on it, but you can, it'll say American whiskey and you can say how old it is and all that stuff. That's fine. So if the Japanese is something like that, or said a mixture of this, this, and this, so people, you know, just so as a consumer, you know what the hell it is you're buying.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
One question for you, since we're talking about rye whiskey there, just interested in how well do you see that Crown Royal travels?
I knew you were going to say that.
Hey, I had to beat you guys to it, man.
Well, you know what? It's funny. It's like Crown Royal is one of those things where, if I remember correctly, it's a Diageo brand. And it's like Canadian Club. For years, it was like a staple of your average bar. If you rolled in somebody's house in like the 80s and your parents had their stuff in there, generally like they'd have the Seagram 7 and 7, Canadian Club, and the Crown Royal would be there. And, you know, somebody's pops would like it neat or like it over some ice when they came home from work. And it's had a reputation because it's easy to drink. It's sweet. You'll find it pretty much every bar. Like I live in the Bronx. It's not like it's a problem to find, you know, Crown Royal in the bar when you walk in. I like Four Roses. Love Four Roses. You don't always find Four Roses in my bar. You will find some Crown Royal and some Seagrams sitting on that shelf.
That Crown Royal bag, I'm telling you,
helps because it's already pre-set up as a gift. You roll up on it, it's already something nice and soft. They can use it for something else.
The delivery room, my dad just had that Crown Royal bag, just put me in it, went home that next day.
Here you go. You know? It's also like it's usually got the purple and gold trim for like the standard releases, so like it looks nice.
You've done a lot of traveling, especially, it seems like, and I'm just curious, what's one of the most interesting places that you've had to drink?
Okay. Interesting as in educational, interesting as in like this shithouse crazy. which you prefer?
I like shithouse crazy.
Doesn't that both go together?
Not necessarily. I'll give you an example. So two places come to mind, entirely different experiences. One is there's this bar in Japan and it's called the Bow Bar. And what the guy that there did was everything in that bar is vintage. So you come in and like, oh, there's a Macallan from the 70s. And oh, there's a Highland Park from the 50s. And, you know, you might drop $200-$300 in that place getting a couple drinks, but it's amazing because it's like a, it's almost like a museum or a library of all these old vintage spirits. So that one was educational because I'm drinking stuff I'm not going to go buy a bottle of. I don't have that kind of cash on me. Or you can have the, I hang out with a friend. I was traveling in Europe last year. I was in Dublin. And my friend's like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go to Belfast tonight. So I'm like, all right, fine. We get a train. Take a train to Belfast. We go to the Merchant Hotel. We go to a couple bars in other hotels. We end up in a place, I think it's like the Ulster Sports Club. And it's like, it's a bunch of different rooms and you go down, down in the basement. They're playing jungle music. The floor is so sticky, it'll pull your shoes off. It was like some kind of like, it was like some kind of combo of like a frat house for like 28-year-olds. You know, you're bumping people with drinks, people are dancing, the DJ's doing whatever the hell he's doing. It's 3 or 4 in the morning. Like the morning, that same morning, I'd flown there from Hamburg, visited another friend. I'm like, I was in Hamburg this morning. I'm in Belfast in this place, crazy ass place, you know, drinking each, double fisting, drinking each hand, listening to jungle music in a basement in Belfast. I'm like, all right, this was all right. This is a good trip, you know.
Well, what about you, Bell? What do you got? You got any good stories?
Craziest place that I've had a drink? Oh, and probably, well, Thailand, full moon party. And yeah, you know how that goes. We went through
There's only so much you can say and still stay married. She's sitting there looking at him.
I will say it was neat. They had this big, obviously, like, no liabilities out there, just people going wild. So they had a big slide, and there was, like, 2 sets of hula hoops around the slide that were on fire. So you'd slide through the slide, ducking to avoid these hula hoops. Once you got to the end, they handed you a flaming shot of what I believe to be, like, Zambuca, because that's the only thing I know that goes on fire for a shot. But so you blow it out and take it back, and, yeah, you have to be in a certain type of mood to do that. Looking back now, would I do that stone cold sober? Probably not, but it was fun at the time, man.
Yeah, that might have actually been crazier than my party. I mean, my shit, I just might have gotten shot on the way out. But yours, you might have died while you were drinking. You might have died on one of the hula hoops.
Damn, that's all I got to say. That's pretty ruthless, damn.
Well, you got to share one of yours, man, before you try to go to the next question here. What's one of your crazy places for a drink?
I can't even tell you, man. That's,
there's been too many of them.
Yeah, honestly, where to choose? Let me get back to you on that one. Let me think right now. Let me get back to you. Ask another question, but let me get to this.
Okay, so I guess my next thing that I'm really, really interested to find out here from an expert is, how many of your friends come to you for pure drinking advice? Or are they like, listen, man, I know that you just drink the same way that I drink.
Most of my friends come to me. It's one of those things. It's not so much that, like, I know so much better and, like, they're afraid to get stuff. It's more they might want me to confirm that what they were thinking of getting is, like, the right move, or if they want to impress somebody, boss, girlfriend, you know, boyfriend, you know, pops, you know, and they may have a very specific request. Like, I had one guy I met while traveling, and he texted me and he's like, my son's turning 30 and I want a whiskey that was from the year he was born. And I'm like, all right. So I'm like, give me your budget. And his budget was okay, but it wasn't anything crazy. So like, it's not like you're like, oh, well, great. Let me, you know, tell you to go get Highland Park 30 because that'll cost you know, $600. But the thing is, if you get grain whiskey, a single grain whiskey, you can get that stuff for like, you can get a 50-year-old for $300. So I'm like, all right, you get you a 30-year-old for your son from a good single grain distillery. It'll be old enough, it'll taste good, and it'll still kind of fit within the pocketbook. Because I'm not opposed to my preference. I want things to be tasty yet affordable. I drink all kind of crazy shit that like I can't afford, but I ain't paying for it. So at that point, I don't care. But if I have to pay for it, I want to make sure that it's on point as far as price. I don't want it to cost more like my first car. So.
Well, I like that because you set up the follow-up question perfectly here. So all the crazy shit that you drink that you're not paying for, what's the craziest shit that you drank that you ain't paying for and glad you're not?
I was at a whiskey festival and I tasted like a non-peated version of Lafroig from like the 20s. And I had like Napoleon brandy from like the 1800s. Like, it's like, it was great. I'm just like, but dude, I ain't paying for this bottle. It was like, okay, well, I'm getting a little drink. The guy had it. He's like, oh, here, taste this. I had some rye, some old Rittenhouse. No, it wasn't old Rittenhouse. It was old Overholt. And the trick is, okay, did you guys watch Bugs Bunny growing up?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you've ever seen, there's a cartoon where Bugs pulls out a bottle of rye whiskey and it says Old Overcoat. Old Overcoat is making fun of Old Overholt, which is for the longest time, if you wanted rye whiskey, that was what you were going to buy. Every bar, that was the rye whiskey behind the counter. So I was at this event where they had it from like, they were digging in somebody's house, some like wealthy son of a bitch. They popped the wall and there was like cases of stuff from like it was from 1910 and 1911 in the wall.
Holy shit.
So Sotheby's or somebody or Bonhams was selling it. And I got to taste a piece of it. It was amazing. And this thing was old as shit. You know what I mean? It was, at that point, it was 90-year-old rye. It still tasted good. But I'm like, I'm not dropping, you know, a G for a bottle. You know, considering what it was, that was probably cheap. But I'm like, yeah, it's still a G. You know?
Where can one get your books?
All right. Well, this one, the one that's out, which, you know, it's big and heavy. It's
is that an encyclopedia?
Kind of. It's like, yeah. It's a big, think of it as the joy of cooking, but all about cocktails. So anything you wanted to know, whether it was about vodka or rye or, you know, rye cocktails, vodka cocktails, absinthe cocktails.
In there.
And you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Barnes & Noble. It's more places than I thought it was. You know, I was thinking I should ask for more money. When I'm like, really? It went there? All right. You guys should have paid me more. But it's a good book. Like, even if I say so myself. It's one of those things where there are certainly other cocktail books I recommend that I like. But as far as like, if you just wanted one book to work off of just in general, you're sitting in your house, you're having a party, you want to go look for something, you're like, oh, we work out how to make a punch from this. It's in there. You know, I want to learn how to make a Manhattan. Yeah, it's in there. And then some, has some basic stuff. Like I have a section called the Riddle of Ice. You guys seen Conan? The original Conan with Schwarzenegger. Yep. Okay. So early in that movie, it has a scene where like, Schwarzenegger's dad is talking to him. Conan's dad is talking to him about steel. And so I took the beginning of that and I talked about ice, like how important it was. And the old man in the speech, he tells me, he's like, there's no one you can trust, not man, not woman, not beast. He picks up his big ass sword and he goes, but this you can trust. And I roll from that to ice. Because it's one of those things where it's something I got taught by a good bartending friend of mine. It's the thing that can mess up your drink. You use the wrong ice, your drink's watery. You know what I mean? You take the ice that's in the back of your fridge and sitting there next to somebody's stew, it's going to taste like meat. You know, it's like, I'm at the point now where I make clean ice if I'm having people for a party, so that shit's fresh. And nobody thinks about it. Like, you know, you go to the store, you get bags of ice. That ice is fine to cool shit down. Don't put your drink in it. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, no, you want to make some nice, fresh, clean ice. So that way, and have clean ice trays. I'm so anal at this point in time. I have ice cube trays I only use for parties. Like, I use it for a party. I make the ice in that shit. Like, I make batches. I put it away. And I pull it back out for a party. Because, you know, if it's sitting back there next to some leftover stock, or you got shit in the fridge next to that, like, the frozen vegetables, it still pick up a little stink.
Yeah, but what if you invited people over that you don't really care for? Yeah. Don't you want to give them that?
Well, you know, you kind of ideally always want to leave a good impression. You know, I got a reputation now. And like, if you have people in your house, you got a reputation too. You don't want people saying, I was at that dude's house, he made some cocktails, and them cocktails were shit. You know, you don't want that. One of them, those cocktails were the bomb.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I don't know why I go to bars. I should be going to his house.
This whiskey tastes like spinach in it.
Yeah, exactly.
How did he do that?
Shit he was
see,
doing.
See when you say it. See when you say it out loud, how bad it sounds, Nick. Come
on. So how do you do the fresh ice? You boil it?
No, it's more that I mean, obviously, if you could, what you can do is, if you're using bottled water, that works. You can even use regular water. It's really about the ice cube. I mean, not the ice cube, the ice tray. So silicone works. You have to clean it once in a while with some baking soda and some soap because it's rubber. It'll hold some, the silicone will hold some flavor. Those old school steel sons of bitches, they're not bad. They're kind of cranky. The ones you got to friggin' like lever that shit out.
Yeah,
like I said, I'm spoiled now. So now I get them big, like fist-sized pieces of ice, which is the kind of thing you can dump it in your glass and then you can pour in like two fingers of whiskey or whatever and you finish your whiskey and there's still a good chunk of ice in there. That's the thing is, if you take that shit from the fridge, you push it in and it gives you little pebbles, that stuff melts in like...
That's the worst.
And you got a watery-ass drink and ain't nobody wants a watery-ass drink, you know?
Amen. Amen. So what are
What about the sphere ones, those big ones?
The sphere ones are, well, they're okay. It's like the nice thing about it being big, and either the big round ones or the big square ones,
yeah,
is that it melts slower, but it cools down your drink. So it adds a little bit of water, but it doesn't just turn it into slush. So yeah, there's that.
I'm learning, man. I'm learning. I gotta get this book of yours. It's called
No Drink.
It's called Drink Like the Ultimate Cocktail Book, right?
Yeah.
If you
get it, you know, here, I'll even autograph it for you, assuming you want my autograph.
Well, of course, man. I was expecting a picture, but I'll dig the autograph.
Well, my picture in the book. I didn't think about it. I stole my picture in this damn book. But I'll work something out, you know.
For sure.
So since you're the cocktail expert, what's a good cocktail what's one of your go-to cocktails then if you're having people over since you want to leave a good impression?
Let's see. It depends on how lazy I am. If I'm really lazy, I go for a highball. Highball, nice. Now because it's summer. There's no highballs are the shit like in Japan. It's like highballs are what made whiskey take off in Japan because in the summer, it's hot. Your first thought ain't, let me choke down some whiskey. However, you take two fingers of whiskey, you take some, you know, some club soda, lots of ice, you can just choke that shit down all night. And also, it's like, it's refreshing. If you're a person, you've got a yard, you're working out outside, you're like, hey, let's, you know, you could go outside, be mowing the lawn or sit outside for a picnic. They're fast to make. You can crank that shit out quick. You can make lots of it. You know, because it's like every other cocktail, like I like daiquiris. Daiquiris take time. Not much time, but they take more time than highballs do. So that's me.
So if you're going to impress then, let's go with going to impress. And you're going to spend the extra time.
I'm
going to
cut you off right here. He's basically saying don't get sugary drinks. That's basically it. Drink like an adult. That's all he's saying.
Well, I'm going to call you out.
Drink like an adult.
I told people... when I did the book that my, you know, it's like, you have to think of the book as a starter. You know, you're going to start making the cocktails and the shit you get in a bar, you might be like, let me fix this. Maybe it's too sweet. So take something like a rusty nail, which most people don't drink because it's too sweet, because it's drambuie and it's friggin' like, and it's only too sweet because they don't make the distinction when they do the recipe. You need a smoky scotch because drambuie is like basically it's functionally it's honeyed whiskey. So it's very sweet. So you need something to kind of counteract that. So you want a smoky whiskey to balance it out. Where I fix it is I'm like, all right, well, let's reduce, like keeping the ingredients the same, let's reduce the proportions. Maybe you turn the drambuie into an aerosol. You mist the glass with the drambuie. You put in two fingers of your smoky scotch. You do like a drambuie floater. drink that. Probably tastes better. Just give it a swirl. You're good. But if I wanted to impress somebody, I mean, okay, I'll say this. When I do cocktails, I tend to stick to no more than 3 or 4 ingredients. Why? Because I want to get drinking. And if I'm sitting there and I'm cutting up stuff and I got to do prep work.
I love this.
That gets in the way of me drinking. You know, that's part of why I didn't go to cocktails first and why it was easier to drink wine or drink whiskey. It's like whiskey, just open it up, put it in a glass, start drinking. But there's some I like. I like daiquiris. I like lemon drop. I like ones with citrus, especially with lemon, because then you can reduce the amount of sugar, have it be a little bit tart, but still have a good drink. Also, again, when it's hot and you want to hang, those are the drinks that are more refreshing. Basically, you're taking a lemonade and spiking that shit, you know.
Are you ever going to decide to have your own drink, like have your own whiskey brand?
No. Again, we're saying I'm lazy. Let me take that back.
It's not like you're just going to be the only person there, just like, you know, heating that bad boy up and mixing it and putting it together.
Well, I've been working with somebody to do some independent bottling. So that way I could cherry pick like unique or interesting whiskeys and put my name on it. You know what I mean? Like if it was music, it's like I'm a talent scout. I went out there, I'm like, oh, that rapper or that drummer, they're the bomb. Them come work for me. Let them do their shit. We put my name on that. And then good. Everybody's happy. You know what I mean? They get their money.
You're basically saying, hey, I like this drink. Cool. I'm going to stamp with my name on it.
Suge Knight.
I can't just annex it. I have to like work with them and make sure it's okay. I can't just take it.
You're basically Japan. Is that what's good?
Could be. Yeah. Depends. But I mean, or I could be, it's almost like I told somebody once, like being a whiskey Sherpa. You know, I'm out there searching and I know certain paths to go and I'm going to help you get where you need to be. And by the way, hook me with like, you know, a barrel or whatever the hell it is you're making, because I think it's something special. And that way it's like, I get a barrel for me that I put out with my name and that helps you do whatever you have to do. You know, it also avoids the expense of owning a distillery because that shit ain't cheap.
Very true. I'm going to kind of go back a little bit here, back to Japan. What was the best sake you ever had?
I don't even know if I know the name of the best sake I ever had, because of course I can't speak Japanese.
Is there any like different fusions of sake? Like I know people do sake with like beer or like sake shots, but is there anything else that you can do with it?
There is, but I will say this. You have to be careful with sake. Like at my day job, I work at law firms. At one of the law firms I worked at, they had a Christmas party and they did it at a karaoke bar. And people were there, and because the firm's paying, they're drinking whiskey, they're drinking sake. I don't think I've ever seen so many people call out till like Corona, as far as like people couldn't come to work because they had like, they set off like some kind of cultural war in their stomach and they lost. You know what I mean? Dudes were like around the corner holding themselves, because sake, just like wine, that like it goes down easy, but if you're not paying attention, it will beat the shit out of you. You know,
true,
and these people with an open bar, you know, they made some mistakes and bad things happen.
So that was part one of our interview of Kurt Maitland. We're going to take a break right there and we're going to come back next time and we're going to have a little bit more of an extended interview with him. He's got a whole bunch more to say. He's going to tell us about spirits owned by people of color, which are becoming very popular right now. Some good ones to look out for. We're going to talk about some alternative spirits besides whiskey that you can get that still pack the same punch. We're going to answer the question, hey, what happened to rum? And we're also going to get him to run the gauntlet, and he's got some good answers for that one. So you're not going to want to miss part two. Make sure you download that one as soon as it comes out and give that a listen, because it was a fun interview we had. And this guy teaches us a lot about spirits that we thought we already knew. So you can impress at your next cocktail party there. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Thirst World Problems Podcast. For more exclusive content, follow us on Instagram @ThirstWorldPod. Make sure to subscribe, like, and share.